100 years ago today, the face of warfare was changed forever. It happened during World War I on a battlefield in northern France. That's when the British Army deployed the world's first tanks. These giant armored killing machines have been a central feature of combat ever since. It was a historic day, and who better to talk about it than the world's history guy, Chris Wolf. So let me start with the obvious question, Chris. What happened that day? What was so different?
Well, so just imagine you're a German soldier on that misty morning in France 100 years ago. You probably think you've seen every terror that modern war can show. Machine guns mowing down your comrades, barbed wire traps, artillery blasting away whole platoons, poison gas torturing your friends who are too slow to get their gas masks on. You're probably a pretty hardened soldier. And then out of the mist comes rumbling a giant armored machine, crushing all the barbed wire obstacles that you've put out there before, simply rolling over all the craters and ditches on its tracks. And then it starts spitting death from its machine guns and cannon. You shoot with every weapon you have, but it just simply can't be stopped. So what do? You can either stay and die, or you can panic and run. And so we're lucky enough to have found a recording of one survivor, a German lieutenant called Miles Reinke. Here he is speaking in a BBC program long after the war.
When I saw these tremendous machines, which we couldn't make out, we didn't know what they were, we never have seen them before, when they approached us, went downwards towards the trenches, we thought that we would be compelled to retreat towards Berlin.
And those Germans, what did they see that day, like the tank? Is it similar at all to what we have today, kind of a bulletproof bulldozer with a protective space inside for soldiers?
Yes, but visually it's very different to what you think of as a modern tank. It was more like a flat oblong that's been squashed down, like I think the term is a rhomboid, with the cannon pod, the battle pods kind of on the side rather than on top.
What was it like on the side of the Brits driving these things?
Well, it was pretty daunting. There was huge pressure on them from the common foot soldiers who thought they were there to just end the war. So there was that kind of pressure. And then there was the task itself. So here's Lieutenant Victor Huffam, who was in charge of Tank D9 that day.
We had been taken down to the front line on the previous day and shown what we had to go through. It was terrifying. There were shell holes there that you could put houses in. The land was practically impassable, but we'd volunteered for the job. And we had a go.
Then there's an enlisted man we can hear from as well, a Private Roy Reifer. He was a gunner in one of the tanks. He also survived the war and described what it was like making that first tank attack 100 years ago today.
There was a terrific amount of noise in the tank, made up by the engine, the tracks. We were fired on by German machine guns, and the impact of their bullets was making the inside of the armor plate white hot.
So these flakes of hot white metal would come off from the sides of the tank and blind you, as happened to one of Roy's buddies on the other side of his tank, a guy called Billy Sugden.
So why was the tank developed?
If you've seen any movie about World War One, you have this vision of people in trenches with barbed wire in between them and nobody moving anywhere in this senseless kind of human wave attacks. So the idea was to have an armored machine that could break the stalemate and punch through those fortifications and allow one side to move on toward victory. So really, the idea was that it was a machine that could break through the stalemate.
And why the word tank? Where'd that come from?
Well, that's particularly fascinating because the British developed the idea under a complete blanket of secrecy. So they created this whole scheme that they were going to call them mechanized water tanks for carrying water for the troops in Mesopotamia. Literally, they looked like water tanks, and that's what they told the workers they were building. So they just called them water tanks or tanks. And then one of the British officers involved thought that was a fun name, and they changed it. Previously, they were considering calling them land ships.
But as a means to end World War One, how effective was the tank?
It was really effective, but the momentum was kind of squandered because the Brits used them as soon as they had them ready, rather than some of the developers who wanted to mass them all together and achieve one big breakthrough. So those kind of attacks did happen right at the end of the war, but the opportunity was kind of wasted in 1916 because the Germans were able to develop tactics to counter it.
The world's history guy, Chris Wolf, always fascinating speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Marco.
Thanks also to the BBC program Witness for making that archive tape available.